Good morning.
Okay, so I've been asked this morning to do a presentation about the Maranatha Resource Center, which is named after this church. You can go to the next slide. So I'm going to break the presentation down into three parts. So the first thing I wanted to do is just show you a little video clip of some pictures. You may have seen this before. I didn't make this. It was made by people who've gone there previously. Just to give you, anyone who doesn't know anything about the center, a little bit of a background about how it started. And then after that, I will do a presentation of a report that I made for the missions committee of this church. Based on, I went to visit the center in August and December of this past year. So I'm going to present the pictures and the things that I discussed and found with Anne. And then after that, I'm going to make it more personal and just talk about how this center and this project impacted me personally. Okay, so here is the little video clip. It's about 5 minutes long. All right. So I didn't make that presentation. I won't take credit for it. So I was among the people who went in 2001 with people from this church. So actually, Melanie Cramp is my sister. She was my connection to the church, and that's how I got involved in the project. The pictures that you saw there, the latest ones were from 2004. So I went back, I was living in Africa this past year, and I went to visit Anne and the project in August, and then again in December. So this is what I'm going to share with you now, is some of the triumphs and trials since then. And hopefully you can recognize, I wanted to show those first pictures because you can really see a change from then and now. So I've organized this report based on some of the goals of the Resource Center. And the first and foremost, as you saw in the past presentation, is to provide water. So at the Resource Center, as you saw from 2003, right now there are 8 water tanks, above ground water tanks. And Anne learned that you have to keep water in them or else they'll dry up and crack. So there are 8 now. There was 10 previously, but 2 were damaged because of that. But it's really incredible the way that Anne was running around to collect water. There would be buckets and everywhere. Anytime there was a tiny little drip, there would be a bucket there. So she was really trying her best to conserve and collect as much water at her home and at the Resource Center as possible. And there's a reason for that. If you can go to the next slide. So this was a picture of a little, a lake, but it doesn't last all year. Seasonal, there you go. Seasonal lake in Migwani, which is next to Mwingi, where the Resource Center is. So this is a picture in December, and you can click again. Here's a picture in August. So in this area, it's one of the driest regions in Kenya, and they get short rains from October to December, and long rains from March till May, and then in between then, there's no precipitation at all. So I collected some information from the United Nations from a website called Relief Web just to talk about the importance of water in the region. So they said, over the past 2 years, low precipitation has gradually diminished water levels and depleted the land on which livestock graze. The failure of the 2010 and 2011 seasonal rains has virtually halted crop production. Already vulnerable farmers and agro-pastoralists are now struggling to obtain critical foods and seeds. Meanwhile, the lack of marketable crops, together with the dwindling number of jobs on local farms, has severely constrained access to income-generating opportunities. So the area of Mwingi is classified as a level 3 crisis area, which is 2 steps below having a famine. So the next step would be emergency and then famine after that. So there's limited grass for grazing. So the cattle are getting malnourished, so people are forced to sell their cattle. Then they have to sell them at a lower cost. And the cattle for them is kind of like their assets, so they're losing their assets. Then the farmers are unable to glean seeds from the failed harvests in the past 2 years. So then they're forced to go to the market and purchase seeds, which is an additional cost to them. Then there's a limited food supply again. So instead of being able to supply their families with food, they have to go to the market for food, which is another expense, and the reduced cash inflow. There's a reduced cash inflow, yet the prices have hiked from 50 to 80% in the past couple of years on food staples. So then people are not eating enough. So this means children are too weak to attend classes, which means there's a lot more street children. And then people who normally make their living off of the farming in the rural areas are forced to go to the city to try to find work. But of course, not everyone can find jobs in the city. So again, there's more people left on the streets in the city. And then as you can see from the picture there, what the people are doing, I tried to enlarge it as much as possible, but they're actually digging holes to try to get water from the area. So streams, wells, and boreholes have dried. So again, if people have money, they're forced to go to purchase water or to travel longer distances to find reliable water sources. So this website says on average, people travel 2 kilometers to get water, and it could be anywhere up to 4 hours to get water. So they don't have taps in their homes like we have. They really have to work hard to get the water. And then the problem with getting water like this is that there's a risk of contamination from livestock. So water is a really important thing in the region. You can go to the next. So here are a picture of the water tanks that are there off the main buildings, the kitchen, the guest house, and the custodian's house. But of course, this is still not enough. And I wanted more water than that. Go to the next slide. So this was the major project that the church has money to pay for. It was to dig a cistern that's below the ground. So in the video you saw, the people were standing around and they said, this is where you're going to dig. So it's been dug. There's the hole for the cistern. but there's been some complications with the project. So there's another orphanage in the region. I didn't get to visit it. But it's a successful orphanage. And so Anne is getting a lot of her ideas from this project. And they have a cistern like this. But instead of using bricks to build it, they use cement to help prevent cracking and leakage. So it's a more reliable cistern. But Anne was really trying hard to use local laborers in the project to try to support and build a community. So the problem is that the local people don't have experience building a cistern like this. So they'll say that they'll do the project, then they'll realize it's a little bit over their heads, and then they'll kind of back out last minute. And I witnessed this in August when I was there for a week. We were meeting with this contractor. We were going to the stores. We were getting supplies. He was supposed to come on Monday to get started. And then Monday came, and he showed up to Anne's house, and he said, oh, I'm building a house this week. And Anne was like, but you're supposed to be starting this project. And then that was it. And then when I came in December, still the project hadn't been started. So the solution now that Anne was looking to do was to hire a contractor from Nairobi, which would be more expensive, but then hopefully more reliable to get someone who's experienced and who can get the job done, because this is really of utmost importance to the resource center. Okay, so another goal then of the resource center was to provide food to those in need. So there's a large piece of land at the resource center. It's not just a plot for the buildings, which they can use for growing crops. And they tried to plant some maize, which is corn, and some beans this past year. But because of the drought, they lost most of the harvest. But whatever they did get, they did distribute to orphans in the area. So another idea that Anne has is to raise chickens, which is easy to do in the area. So for meat and for the eggs, and not only to be able to feed orphans, but also to be able to sell in the market. So a little bit of a business idea there. And same thing with a mango orchard. So the treasurer of the resource center, they have a committee, and the treasurer is a retired government employee, and he has his own mango orchard. I went to visit it. It's quite beautiful. Kind of as a hobby, kind of as a business, and he's been sharing his experience and expertise with the resource center to develop their own mango orchard. And they're planting a grafted kind of mango plant. So mangoes grow wild as well. So the kind that they're growing would grow off-season. So again, they would be able to sell them in the market at a higher cost to get more money from the mangoes. And the underlying goal that Anne was trying to emphasize while I was there is that she would like the resource center to be self-supporting. She doesn't want it to rely on donations all the time. So all of these little business ideas are things that she's trying to do to make the resource center be able to run on its own. And they planted a whole bunch of mango trees as well, but unfortunately, they got trampled by cows or eaten by cows that were grazing in the area, which leads to the next slide. A fence. So a fence is something that's really important in Africa because the land is not so demarcated as it is in Canada. Like even when you're walking down the street, you know, like it's someone else's yard, you stay off their yard. It's not really like that in Africa. Everyone's kind of community living, everyone can go everywhere. So same thing with animals. The animals can just kind of graze wherever. So they had built a fence in the local way using wooden poles and barbed wire and thorn bushes, which works temporarily but also needs constant supervision because the wood can rot or be eaten by ants, and then the goats and people can easily, you know, find a way through little holes. And eventually the fence kind of falls apart, and as soon as there's one hole, then you know, animals follow each other, so then they can kind of all get in. So the fence was ineffective, and that's what happened. So the things that they planted got destroyed. But you can push the button again. I don't know who this person was, but someone, I think affiliated with this church, went and donated money for a project for a fence to be built. This was a more permanent structure, and this is the kind of fence that they're using at schools and government offices. So it's made out of cement and chicken wire, so it's much more difficult to break down, and it'll be a much more permanent structure. And yeah, so the fence is there, and it's all complete. So now when they plant this year, then they're hoping that they won't have the same problems as they had last year with animals and people getting into the property. So the future goals with this in mind and with the water is that the resource center would be able to house a greenhouse, and connected with that, a couple other goals of the resource center was to provide proper food and nutrition for HIV/AIDS affected families, and to provide training of small-scale farming to the local community. So they would be able to host that once they have the land protected now, and once they have the water, then they'll be able to have a greenhouse. And again, Anne is modeling this idea off of the other orphanage in the region who has a successful greenhouse. Okay, so another goal of the resource center was to provide camp facilities. So this was a schedule that I saw posted from the 2011 camp. And when I arrived in December, Anne had just finished running the camps for that year. So in Kenya, the students are on holidays in December. So that's when the overnight camps are held, just like we hold ours in July and August, because that's when our school is out. So these camps are for orphans and for any people in the community. And I know in her letter, she reported that a number of the children turned their lives over to Christ, which was exciting. And the facility is also used to host different pastors' seminars that Anne has been involved with training pastors in the area. So the reason that the resource center can host these things is because of the kitchen. So you saw in the video, there was a picture that said, this kitchen needs some tender loving care. So it got some tender loving care. It's actually a really well equipped kitchen. The ovens are like top notch. They don't look like it to us, but for them, it's really a fuel efficient, which is important because they use wood and coal for fuel. So the way it's designed is it can trap the heat in, and so much heat is not lost, so they can use less fuel. And Anne was trying hard to keep a tab on the different supplies. So one thing I did when I was there was to paint M on everything in the kitchen and to number everything so that when kids come to the camps or when pastors come, then people can be signed out supplies. So then there's more accountability that people return things so that it doesn't get lost or stolen. And what Anne said would be the next thing that they would need would be a dining hall, especially for the rainy season. Because when it rains in Africa, it really pours. So there's nowhere to hide. So that would be the next thing that the resource center would need. Then there are guest houses there. And mattresses were purchased for the children to use so they don't have to sleep on the ground anymore when they come. And again, we numbered all these mattresses so that kids could be signed out a mattress so there could be some accountability there. And it's sufficient for the kids to be sleeping on a mattress on the floor, but when the pastors come for the pastor seminars, even them, it's hard to get up and down from the floor. So some beds are needed, and definitely to be able to host other large groups, they need some dormitories. So that was the next thing Anne saw as a vision. She knows exactly where the dormitories would be built to be able to host other groups, again, as an income generator, and then to be able to use the facility more for camps and for training pastors. And a part of that as well is the solar panels. So there was a few solar panels there, and solar power is a really cost-effective source of energy in Africa or in regions such as this where it's sunny all year round. So that's another thing that she was talking to me about was getting more solar power for the resource center. So people who go there, it's kind of outside of Mwingi. Mwingi is quite a big city, actually. So the resource center is kind of out, maybe kind of like going to Headingley from Winnipeg. So it's a little bit out of town, and it's a beautiful view, and it's really peaceful, and people really like it, and they really want to be able to use the land. So if it had dormitories, then people would be able to start making more use of the center. And then Anne was really enthusiastic to show me this little area that was tucked in behind the main building that she envisioned small groups meeting there to pray together. Anne is a really faithful prayer warrior. And this was just something that she was so excited about. It's kind of like her secret. She was like, wait till you see this. So she has it all envisioned in her mind, you know, with little like picnic tables and kind of like a family atmosphere. And so I just wanted to share that with you guys too. Another goal of the resource center was to provide reading materials, and you saw in the video clip that books were brought there. So they're still there, and at some point there was some library lending, but again, there needs to be a person there, like a librarian, to kind of, she was trying to do it on an honor system, you know, the people borrow books and then bring them back, but people forget or, you know, become partial to a book and don't necessarily want to bring it back. So some of the books were going missing, so Anne wasn't able to keep doing that. So a librarian would need to be there to help manage that process and keep people accountable. So in my report that I wrote, some of my conclusions, I'm just quoting myself from my report. I said that I was very impressed with the progress of the center, the vision and accountability of the board, and the passion, faith, and humility of Anne. Anne was completely transparent with her updates and responses to questions. She was grateful for accountability and eager to maintain a positive relationship with Maranatha Church. Even in the 2 weeks I was there, I got to experience the challenge and frustration of work in Africa compared to work in North America. And I kind of laugh wearing this outfit. I had this outfit made when I was visiting Anne, so I only had a few weeks to get it done. And there was a tailor in the town of Migwani, Anne kind of lives outside of Migwani, that I talked to, and she said she could be there next day and get me measured to get it done. And Anne's sister was teaching at a school next to the tailor, so she agreed that she would take me in the morning. And then I was supposed to go with Anne to the resource center in the afternoon to start doing this stuff in the kitchen. So I didn't tell Anne my secret plan of running away to the market in the morning to get my dress made and then coming back. So I got up with Anne's sister, Beatrice, and we went to the town. And then we got to the school. And my understanding was that Beatrice was going to take me to the tailor right away. And she's like, no, we have to have breakfast first. So 2 hours later, she brought me to where the tailor was, and we get to the shop, and she's not there, the tailor is not there, even though she said she was going to be there. So all the people around were like, oh, no, she's here, she's coming right away. 2 hours later, this woman shows up, she measures me and everything, and takes my material to make the dress. So I didn't end up getting back to see Anne until like lunchtime after lunch. And Anne was, she was kind of angry with me, actually. She goes, "What were you thinking trying to plan two things in one day? This is not Canada, you know?" Which made me laugh because I'm like, well, in Canada, I plan 10 things in one day, you know? But that's just the way of life in Africa. You can't, you know, things just, it's not a time-centered society, you know? It's people-centered, and so there's things beyond people's control, and they've just kind of gotten used to the fact that, you know, things just don't happen the way that you plan, so why bother making plans and just kind of go with the flow? So, yeah, so I experienced the frustration. And Anne, because she lived in North America, she has a bit of sense of how life works here, so she has some inner conflict as well, because she has an idea in her mind, and she's like, ah! But at the same time, she's still African too, so it's kind of funny when she would do the same thing and she would really hold things up and I'd be like, Anne, come on, let's go. Yeah, so then I said, on top of that, then patient, transparent communication is needed on both sides. So if you're working with the people there, then you need to realize they're a different culture and they have different values. And so while you're trying to understand them, they also have to try to understand your point of view. So it really is a graceful, patient process. Okay, so my personal testimony, just to connect this with how this project has impacted me, there's a verse in Ephesians that says, God is able to do immeasurably more than all we ask or imagine. And I think the impact of this center and project is extending beyond what even Anne imagined, even though she's able to imagine and plan big. So for me, going to Kenya in 2001, that was my first time, not my first time overseas, but my first time in Africa. And I was deeply impressed by the poverty that I saw. And I remember doing a children's camp one morning. There was a picture there of the puppet shows. That was, after doing that, I just had a heavy heart because I just felt like, what's the difference between these children and me that I was born in Canada and they were born here? Like, how was I so blessed to be born into such a wealthy and prosperous society? And it just really impacted me to see that it's really beyond my control and it's in God's control. And there's a verse in the Bible that says that as well, that God chooses where and when we live. But it just also convicted me that the resources and the education and everything that I have here is not really mine. Like, God has made me a steward of it. And his plan and his idea was not for me to keep all these things to myself, but to share with those in need who don't have those things. And at the same time, on the reverse, I was so touched by the people who had a million reasons in my mind why they could complain and why they could give up. And yet the opposite was true. Like that verse that was up there about being joyful in hope and patient in affliction and faithful in prayer. Like, these people I found were more true to that than any Canadian that I knew. And it also challenged me mentally to be like, in North America, you know, we say consumerism and getting a good job and all of those things are the focus of our life. And yet here were people who didn't have those things and they seemed much happier than we did in Canada. And that left a taste in my mouth that I wanted more of. So the way that this has impacted me is I've continued to go back to Africa. I've been back 4 times since that trip, just in various capacities, doing more volunteer work, using the education that I've received as a teacher and sharing that with people there. And also just being blessed in return to like go back to I feel like the roots and the simplistic life, the value of community, the value of family, and I've been blessed in so much ways from that. And the second way that this impacted me was the experience of being a foreigner. So we were living there, and the kids in the community called us Mzungus, which means white people, basically. We are the only white people there, and just comparing in my mind the way that we treat foreigners in Canada. Not that we treat them bad, but the way that they treated us there, like we were really embraced as a part of the family. We weren't seen as strangers or guests. Like we were really accepted as family members. And people who had nothing were willing to share with me everything that they did have. And even when I was visiting Anne over Christmas in December, she let me stay with them for Christmas. And it was her family that pooled together to give me a Christmas gift, even though I was the one who was their guest. Like, I should have been giving them a gift. And they didn't have money to exchange gifts with each other. Instead, they chose to put their money to give me a guest, even though they'd already given me so much by allowing me to stay there for Christmas and share their meal with them. So, just really generous people. And so, it made me think of how and this is a part of our life because we live in a cold climate that our doors are always closed, our fences are always closed, how difficult it is for newcomers to get into Canadian life here and to get become a part of communities and become a part of families. And so it gave me a desire to work with newcomers in Canada as well. So I've been able to take a position at a school that works teaching newcomers to Canada. And that's, again, because of this trip and this experience that I had. And then since it's Father's Day today, to tie this all together, in the Old Testament, there's many verses where God ties these people together, the orphans, the widows, the oppressed, the foreigner, and the fatherless. And it's clear in the Bible that fathers are really important members of society and members of families. And in Africa, there are many who are fatherless because of disease, because of death, because of men having to leave their homes to find work, or because of different cultural expectations of men in the family. Whereas in Canada, I think that many are fatherless due to divorce or people's preoccupation with work. And I can say, even though my dad is a respectable, godly man, I would consider myself fatherless growing up. Because of my family circumstances, he just wasn't a part of my life growing up. But God says that he's a father to the fatherless, and he sets the lonely in families. And I can say from my church experience, there's a man who I consider my spiritual father, and he has really deeply impacted my life. And I think that in her community, Anne was reaching out to the orphans and the fatherless, and it might seem like more obvious there where the needs are. But I just wanted to encourage the men that are here today that there's even fatherless here in Winnipeg, and the important role that you have in society, that there are children and youth and even young adults or old adults who need godly men in their lives. So you have a really important role to play in society. And then for all of us, I think we need to ask God to show us how he would like to use us to bless the people who are oppressed and fatherless and the widows and the foreigners among us, because that's something that's repeated in the Bible and something that's big on God's heart. And I don't know if those verses are up there. The next slide. Yeah, so here's some verses from Deuteronomy and Isaiah. So says, circumcise your hearts, therefore, and do not be stiff-necked any longer. For the Lord your God is God of gods and Lord of lords, the great God, mighty and awesome, who shows no partiality and accepts no bribes. He defends the cause of the fatherless and the widow, and loves the foreigner residing among you, giving them food and clothing. And again in Isaiah it says, learn to do right, seek justice, defend the cause of the fatherless, and plead the case of the widow. So then, in conclusion, I'm sure most of you know that Anne passed away this past April. So these were my words to her when I found out that she passed away, and I just wanted to share them with you guys in conclusion. So I said, my dearest Anne Nguku, now that you're in heaven and pain-free, I'm certain that you're not resting in peace but dancing up a storm. Anne was quite a fun woman, let me tell you. I'm so thankful for the time I got to reconnect with you this past year when I was in Kenya. Your vision, passion, faith, generosity, and kindness when I first met you in 2001 played a huge role in shaping the direction of my life. You are a blessing to me and so many others. Well done, good and faithful servant. You have been faithful with a few things. I will put you in charge of many things. Come and share in your master's happiness. Enjoy him and looking forward to seeing you again, Jen. That's it. Thank you.